2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, September 24th, 2014. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, there's an awful lot of Eagles to talk about this week, and here in Merle say we're going to the Super Bowl. It's got a lot of people in Philly talking like that already.
Yeah, there's just a bit to talk about. Another come-from-behind win, some fights, a questionable hit on our quarterback, more injury woes for the offensive line, and a huge game this weekend out west against a desperate team. I think we'll have some good material to work with this time, Bill.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, hey, thanks to our friend Carl at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown. We will be giving away another autographed 8x10 this week to the first person that can call in and answer our Eagles trivia question. This week's autographed photo will be of former Eagles tackle and college and pro football Hall of Famer Bob Boomer Brown. Boomer will be doing an in-store signing at Carl's Cards on October 4th, so the photo will be sent right after that appearance. Last week's winner of the Willie T. William Thomas photo was Adam Jajcic of Lakeland, Florida, and we'll have to see if Adam calls in again tonight, Chet. We've got a pretty good trivia question for the listeners tonight.
You know, I remember Boomer Brown from when I first started watching the Eagles back in the mid-60s as a young kid. He was a great right tackle in his day who spent 5 years with the Birds. And did you indicate that you had a story about Bob Brown?
I do, and it actually comes about the same time you're talking about, and ended up it's probably been 3 years ago now. But when I was a kid, probably around 1965 or six, my dad took me to the Eagles game, and we used to be able to, we had passes, and we used to stand in the end zone where that wrought iron fence was when I was just a kid. Well, we walked up there one day, and before the game, the players were out standing like in the lot, in the walk-in area there. And there was Bob Brown. And now, you got to remember, I'm five or six, and this was the biggest human being I had ever seen in my life.
Yep, big guy.
And, yes, he was. And especially, you know, back in those days. He'd probably be normal now, but back in those days. Well, and he was actually also probably the first black man I had ever seen. So, years later, I have this Eagles helmet that I'm getting signed by, and it's signed by everybody. Well, Van Buren, Bednarik, and all that. Well, here's Bob Brown going to be at a signing, so I take my helmet, and I go up to see Bob Brown. And I tell him the story about seeing him, and tell him just exactly what I just told you. And I said, you know, ever since then, I was always a Bob Brown fan as a kid and followed your career and all this and that. And his words back to me, Chet, were, I hope I didn't disappoint you.
Oh, that's nice.
How about that coming from a Hall of Famer? I thought that was pretty cool. And what a modest man and what a really good man. He's a heck of a guy. And I was kind of taken back by that whole thing because He accepted the story really well, and he just said, man, you know, that's cool, and I hope I didn't disappoint you. And I'm thinking, you don't have to, you know, you owe me nothing, but it was cool.
Yeah, I never heard anything bad about Bob Brown. I mean, as you said, great player, Hall of Famer. One thing I remember from that era, 1965 and 66, I don't know why I thought about this, but I just thought about it today for the first time in probably 40 years, was back in 65 and 66, Coke and Sprite used to put NFL players on the inside of the bottle caps, and you would collect them, and I guess you would turn them in and get some kind of prizes or something, or some people would just save them, and they would give you a sheet that you actually could stick these bottle caps on, you know, with the face of the players facing upward. And I remember having Bob Brown and Timmy Brown for some reason. So that was just some weird thought that, I totally forgot about these bottle caps, and I looked it up on the Internet, and, yeah, it was 65-66 when the NFL and Coke and Sprite put these bottle caps out. So it's kind of weird.
Yep, collector's items now.
Yeah, yep.
Yep. All right, well, our www.shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. That will be the same number to call to give the trivia answer if you have it. So keep that number in mind, 929-477-2855. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. All right, Chet. You ready for this trivia question?
Shoot, fire away.
Okay, this is the win the Bob Boomer Brown autographed 8x10 courtesy of Carl's Cards. The 1983 draft is considered the draft of the quarterbacks. Also, all told, there were 6 future Hall of Famers drafted in the first round. The Eagles had the number 9 pick in the first round and did not take a quarterback. So we're looking for 2 names. Who did they select with the number 9 pick, and who was the Eagles' quarterback at the time that allowed them not to pick a quarterback?
Interesting question.
All right. Does that need to be repeated, or is that clear enough, what we're looking for?
We'll repeat it again in a few minutes, I'm sure. So let's just let it fly for now.
All right. We'll let her go. So let's talk Eagles. Let's start out I always hate to start out with a negative, but let's talk about Kerry Williams' comments. Let's get started with that. What's your thoughts on that, knucklehead?
Well, Kerry Williams has to learn when to just shut his mouth. And here's a hint. When you're 3-0, don't complain about stuff, okay? The team just won a hard-fought game. You should be happy and celebrating like Jeremy Maclin was coming off the field. And, no, Williams looks like, you know, they just lost a heartbreaking game and, you know, he had a death in the family or something. Kerry Williams came across as a selfish ball player with his whining about, you know, the practice sessions taking too much out of the Eagles, that, you know, didn't leave them with enough stamina or whatever, when apparently for most people's view, just the opposite is true. And whatever his feeling is, that is not the time to bring up something like that. He did apologize, to his credit, yesterday, so we'll give him that, but he's really just got to learn to shut his mouth, and sometimes honesty isn't the best policy.
Well, I think the apology almost had to happen because guy got crushed. And he got I didn't hear anybody, any players, any news media, anything I read, no people, no one supporting this guy, and everybody seemed to feel exactly the way you did. And I have to agree 100%. I mean, what he reminded me of was DeSean Jackson right after last year get eliminated and wanting a raise. You know, it's not about you, fella. It's not about you. It's about the team, and the team won a really tough physical game that actually you, Mr. Williams, didn't play all that well in to begin with. So, like you say, you just need to keep your mouth shut, and you need to play. And I honestly, Chet, I think, and I made this comment to someone, I just commented that with the whatever pick, with their first pick in the 2015 draft, the Philadelphia Eagles pick a cornerback.
Yeah, I wouldn't
because
be surprised.
Mr. Williams signed his pink slip out of town, I feel pretty certain.
Yeah, he, as you said, he did not have his best game, and this may have been a way to deflect some of the criticism that he was going to get for, you know, getting burned by DeSean Jackson and, you know, blowing some coverages. I don't think Williams has had a great season so far. The guy seems to be able to talk a little more than he can play football, so he's got to step it up defensively. Malcolm Jenkins, I think, is doing a good job, but Williams is not. So if he wants to be on this team next year, he's got to shut his mouth and play better.
Yeah, the best thing that could happen to him right now is not have anybody even know he's on the field. Just go out, do your job. Do it so well, nobody's talking about you, and don't make any comments. And save your job on a team that's looking like they're only going to keep getting better. And with that said, let's talk about the defense some. You know, I'm not on board with the defense or haven't been before this, and I am surely not on board with them yet. They couldn't stop the run. They can't stop the pass. Now, they are getting some good play out of D'Amico Ryans, Fletcher Cox. They've got some guys that seem to be playing real well, but they did miss Michael Kendricks a good bit. They just, early in the game, they couldn't get off the field on third downs again. This defense has to get better if they're going to continue to play at this high level.
Yeah, well, they were doing better in the first two games getting off on third down, but, yeah, this game was definitely a setback. And the two names you mentioned were two of the guys who I wrote down here. Fletcher Cox has been playing well all season. D'Amico Ryans has had some good moments. Malcolm Jenkins, too, as I mentioned. He's had two pretty important interceptions the last 2 weeks. Brandon Boykins made some decent plays. But, yeah, beyond that, they're not doing a great job. And, like, Connor Barwin was pretty much invisible, I thought, this past Sunday. So they got to get more pressure on the quarterback. We've talked about this ad nauseum. And, of course, the defensive secondary remains a concern. So they're going to be tested this weekend going against the 49ers for sure. So we'll see what they've got and, you know, if they're up to the challenge.
Yeah, their depth issues, you know, I think are starting to show. We have Marcus Smith dressed out for the first time. He saw his first action, and I think the little bit he was in there, he was kind of lost. You know, Casey Matthews is playing on the inside some. You know, I guess he's a formidable special teams guy. He's not a starting linebacker in this league, and it's such a tremendous drop off between Kendrick and him. But you know, if one more guy goes down, what in the world do? You know, they're about out of options, and we haven't even started talking about the offense yet.
Hey, have we heard anything about Michael Kendricks? Is there a shot that he could play this weekend, or do we not know yet?
I have not seen or heard a thing about it. You know, last week it seemed like you were getting day-to-day reports, and this week I haven't seen or heard a thing.
Yeah, I guess tomorrow the injury report will come out, and we'll see if he's, you know, at least questionable instead of doubtful. So they could really use him, that's for sure, because, as you said, they're a little thin there, especially with when you have to have Casey Matthews and Marcus Smith in there on some regular duty. That's a concern.
Absolutely. You know, and speaking of that, before we get into the offensive line, but you mentioned the injury report. I'm kind of curious to see how that looks, because for one, another injury we haven't heard anything about is Nick Foles. And that guy got the heck beat out of him. You know, he hurt his left shoulder early in the game. He kept battling, and I actually posted on Facebook, I think that effort from Foles was probably as tough an effort from a Eagles quarterback as I've seen since probably all the way back to Ron Jaworski, where he used to get sacked like, you know, 80 times and kept getting up. That's what it reminded me of. And Foles just, he kept battling, he kept grabbing that shoulder, he'd come back and make another big play for them.
Yeah, he did, and I think he also earned a lot of respect from both his teammates and fans. He really stood in there and took it. You thought for sure he was going to get knocked out for at least a couple of plays on several occasions, particularly the hit from Baker, but he got right back in there. So I think he earned the respect of his offensive line, he earned the respect of his other teammates, and a lot of fans who were doubting, you know, what kind of guy he was. I think he proved that he is definitely a warrior. So good to see from Nick Foles, and I think that's going to be a positive for the long run. Yeah, he'll probably be a little sore all week, but, I mean, he'll be ready to go on Sunday for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's this was the coming out party for Nick Foles. You know, all the touchdowns in Oakland and some of the big games that he's had, you know, that was just a football player playing football. This week this isn't a good phrase to use, but I'll say the boy became a man. I mean, he just hung in there, got the heck beat out of him, and just, you know, almost kind of like the old cliche that he willed his team to victory. He just kept battling and battling and battling. And if you weren't a Nick Foles fan before, if you're not now after seeing that, then you'll never will be, because he was something special.
Yeah, he's gotten better each game this year. I mean, he had a very bad first game, even though the Eagles won against Jacksonville. He played better in week two, and he played really, really good in week three. So that's good to see his progression there. I got to tell you, Bill, Sunday's game took a lot out of me. It was another case of, you know, getting outplayed and falling behind by 10 points in this case in the first half, only to somehow end the half with a one-point lead. Then there was that crazy second half with the Chris Baker hit on Foles and the ensuing brawl, DeSean Jackson scoring a big long touchdown pass reception against his former team. We had Jason Kelce earlier getting hurt. He'll need surgery, and he'll be out for a while. We'll talk about that in a bit. Jason Peters getting tossed then for retaliating on Baker's hit on Foles. And, of course, the ultimate victory, the 37-34 win. So that game, which took about 3.5 hours or so, took a lot out of me. You can hear my voice this week still not what it should be. So that was a tough one. But I'll be back Sunday, too. I'll be ready to go again also.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt you'll be ready. You know, I'm with you. And, you know, I think we all thought coming in the Redskins were going to probably give them a little more battle than anybody thought, especially with Kirk Cousins as the quarterback. And they didn't disappoint. Those guys played hard. That defensive front for the Redskins, they came all day long. They kept bringing it. And their offensive line played well. They rushed the football. They protected Cousins pretty well. He probably made, I'm going to say, four passes that cost him the football game. There were several, I want to say three off the top of my head, third down plays where he had open guys and he missed them, threw a couple behind guys. But overall, he played fantastic. If he makes a couple of those plays, they don't win that game. So, I understand the excitement of the Eagles fans, and heck, I'm excited too. Anytime you're 3-0, you got to be excited. But, you know, I'm not ready to hand out the Lombardi Trophy, to anybody right yet. They go through a few more of those bloodbaths in the NFC East. That was old NFC East style football being played, and that goes back to what we talked about with the depth a little bit, and that, you know, that kind of brings us to the offensive line in that situation. They're in dire straits.
Yeah, Casey getting hurt, I think, is really a big blow. He's going to need surgery. He'll be out till, I guess, Thanksgiving. They said, nobody said officially, but 6 to 8 weeks is what is apparently going to be the case. So now this week we're going to have Jason Peters still at left tackle, but then it's kind of a crapshoot. You got Matt Tobin at left guard. David Mulk at center, a guy who I don't think anybody ever even heard of until about 2 o'clock on Sunday. David Mulk is your new center. A likable guy, by the way. I like him. Dennis Kelly's at right guard, and Todd Harriman's now back at right tackle. So a completely different line from what we saw most of last year, for sure. I thought they did an okay job on Sunday. Foles did take a beating, but he didn't get sacked. Of course, the one problem was in run blocking, or at least that's what I'm going to attribute the fact that Shady McCoy only had 22 yards rushing on 20 carries to. It had to be the run blocking, so I guess they got to do a better job with that, and I guess each week they play together, they will get better at that, at least we hope so. Matt Tobin will be in there this week, as I said, and they're pretty high on him. They think he's got a lot to offer. And we saw Wade Smith in action, the new guy, on Sunday when all these injuries and the ejection occurred. So at least they do have some guys to put in there, some bodies, but they're going to have to play well again because the Niners are certainly going to be a real challenge.
Yeah, and I got a message here, Chet, from our buddy Mark McClain, who says Michael Kendrick is out for Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So I was not aware of that, but he also says Nick Foles is okay. So one good and one bad. We sure need Foles, but I sure think we need Michael Kendrick too.
Yeah. What do you think about the offensive line? How do they do, and what do they need to do this week?
Well, you know, the 49ers are pretty good against the run to begin with. I want to say they're ranked about 8th or 7th in the NFC in rush defense to begin with. You know, the Eagles weren't running the ball very well, as you mentioned, even with the starting line. You know, so I see that being a real problem this week. I like the Eagles. I think the 49ers are in a little bit of trouble, which we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But I still like the Eagles in this game, but they've got to do a better job of keeping Foles clean. And at some point, they can't depend on Shady getting these 10 and 15-yard runs, because he's also getting way more negative runs than he is 15-yard runs. And of course, you can't depend on Darren Sproles getting 40-yard runs. So they've got to establish some sort of running game. You know, it's one of those deals where the average looks good because they're getting some longer runs, but there's way, way too many negative runs. And I think you saw that the other day. I think they got manhandled up front for a good portion of that game.
Yeah, they did. I heard, I believe, Pat Shurmur say that the Niners use lots of similar defensive schemes to what the Redskins use. So hopefully the Eagles can learn from that. Now, fortunately for the Birds, the Niners' D isn't what it used to be, particularly because they lost linebacker Navarro Bowman to injury and pass rush specialist Alden Smith to suspension. But they still do have some playmakers, including Justin Smith, who's been around forever, it seems. I think he's going to be 35 next week. But he can still get to the quarterback. He's got 3 sacks already this season. So the Eagles do have to figure out how to get both the running game and passing attack going at the same time.
Absolutely. And one thing we have to mention is we have to talk about our man Jordan Matthews. Breakout, a little bit of a breakout game for Matthews. He played real, real well. And, you know, the games aren't always just decided by touchdowns, but the guy made a lot of nice catches, made some couple runs, and, of course, the touchdowns on top of it. Nice game for Matthews.
Yeah, I jotted down among the positives from Sunday's win the emergence of the Eagles' wide receivers. He had a huge day for Jeremy Maclin, who, 160 yards, whatever. Could have had more if it weren't for that penalty on Kelsey. The first 2 touchdowns of Jordan Matthews' career. And the wide receivers did step up for sure, and it was good to see Matthews get involved like that. That second touchdown was a great throw and a nice catch by Matthews. So good to see he didn't have a case of the dropsies this week. And good to see him get off the schneid and get those first 2 NFL touchdowns.
And interestingly enough, too, is as the wide receivers stepped up, it seemed like the tight ends went away. Brent Celek, it was almost like he wasn't even on the field. They didn't call his name but a couple times. And even Ertz was not a big target. So they went the other way. Obviously, there's probably a lot of defensive scheme to go into that they covered the tight ends, which opened the wide receivers, which is a good thing. So, and I'm still waiting for the breakout from Riley Cooper.
Yeah. Caught a couple of passes. I want to see more from him. I still think he misses DeSean Jackson more than he or anyone else would admit. I think, you know, with Jackson getting some extra tight coverage last year, it opened things up for Cooper. And I don't think they give Maclin the respect that Cooper got or that Jackson got. So I think Cooper's being held back a little bit by that. But he's still okay. He's a good receiver. He's not going to be an all-pro guy ever, but I think he's a decent possession receiver. So I think he will get more involved. He's worked pretty well with Nick Foles last year, as we saw. So when you have a lot of weapons, as the Eagles do with Maclin, Matthews, and Cooper, not to mention the running backs and tight ends, it's tough to spread the ball around, but I think Cooper will become more of a part of the offense in the weeks ahead. And by the way, one other positive that I wrote down, yes, Cody Parkey, 3 more field goals by this great undrafted free agent kicker who's becoming one of my favorites. Good to see those 51-plus yard field goals and all the touchbacks that he's getting on kickoffs.
Yeah, the long field goal the other day, that thing would have been good for 10 or 15 more yards, and it was right down the middle. I mean, it wasn't a question whether it was gone or not. It was gone. It was through as soon as it left his foot.
I'm not missing Alex Henry at all, I got to be honest.
I understand Alex Henry signed. Who did he sign with? He got signed by somebody the other day.
I know he had a tryout with Detroit or somebody last week.
Yeah, Detroit. He signed with Detroit. Yep. Sure enough, that. I think it was Monday.
Yeah, we wish him the
best. Yeah. But,
hey, throw out that trivia question again.
I think we've upgraded there.
Yeah. Let's throw out that trivia question.
Let's get back to it because we do have a caller that just jumped on. Let's see if we can, maybe the caller has our trivia question answer, and then we'll jump back off. Hello, welcome to the show. Well, maybe they're not on here. All right, we'll go with our trivia quiz. Oh, there you are.
Who's there?
Welcome to the show.
Hi, gentlemen, how you doing? It's Mark McClain.
Hello, Mark.
Hi. Listen, I just wanted to talk just a minute. In 57 years, I've watched this game. Last week was an instant classic. If you couldn't be entertained watching that, you just don't like football at all. Every element, nobody could really understand how we won that game. And that's a question I'll throw to both of you. I haven't had a chance to listen the last 5 minutes because I was on the line. But you got outplayed by that team, and I think we discussed last week that it was going to be a close game. Our other partner on the show last week thought it was going to be a little bit wider of a margin. I didn't think that. Washington always plays Philadelphia tough at home in the NFC East. But thoroughly enjoyable, and I'll tell you, I still say nobody has a barometer on this squad yet. And watching all these years, the only thing that the difference in my age between the both of you, Bill and Jim, I saw the 60 championship team. And if you go back and check your records, I don't do that. But you can look at the games that particular year. They were all high scoring, and they were just wild rides with Norm Van Brocklin. And nobody expected that team to win that year either. Eerily, there are similarities. But I guess the injury bug is going to be the key scenario. We got lucky last year, and this year we're going to find out the depth. I got to give the coaching staff of Chip Kelly all the way down the line thumbs up. They recognize some talent, and they're getting the most of what they got. Okay, real quick to Jim first. I'm going to promote you tonight to general manager of the Phillies for next
Uh-oh.
Year.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Yeah. You've got to clean up the mess. So if you want to tackle that later on the show tonight, feel free. If you want to wait till next week, fine. I'll leave you a homework assignment, all right? And,
yeah, we're actually going to do a little Phillies talking here before we're through, Mark.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, there you go, Jim.
You put me in charge of a sinking ship. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, well, you always put people on the hot seat, Jim, so I figured that would be
that's
my
right.
time to do that to you, all right?
That's right. I got you, Mark.
Okay, anytime you can get me back, that's not a problem. Bill, I guess Penn State, how about James Franklin and the job he's doing right now? Real thumbs up. I think I mentioned to you before that he was an intern at my plant in GM about 20-some years ago. And worked with my son for a summer. I actually had a chance. I actually trained him. He graduated from Neshaminy High School up here in Bucks County. And real nice guy, but never dreamed at all that he'd be taking up the blue and white and head coaching there.
I'm really excited about what they got going on up there. They're going to win this week. They're going to be 4-0 going into their bye week. They go to Michigan. They can win up there. They make some 6-0 or 5-0. Then they come back for another bye week, and then they play Ohio State.
Yeah, I think they got a real shot. I'm glad they got reinstated for the bowl, and I'm looking forward to. I'm thoroughly enjoying both my Nittany Lions and Eagles this year, and although I have to take more blood pressure medicine, and that point. It's still worth it's a lot of fun to that
yep,
avenue.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to get off and let you guys talk more. It's always good talking to you. I don't know if you got the message on Michael Kendricks, but he
is
still one thing. Okay, great. He's definitely out. And my feather to the game, San Francisco, is him. I think the fact that he's not playing against Colin Patrick hurts us. So I'm not feeling that confident for this week. It'd be a nice surprise if we pull it out, but I think the offensive line is enough to still get us points on the board. But Kendrick is a real threat in the middle there with that quarterback from San Francisco running. And I don't think Casey Matthews can meet the standard that Kendrick sets. So I think this may be the first week you actually see a difference in the defense without him in the lineup. And you can discuss that further down the line. Great talking to you guys, and I'll talk to you more on Facebook during the week. Thanks a lot.
All right, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good one.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, well, let's get back to our trivia question, and always good input from Mark. He's always fun to listen to. All right, here we go. The 1983 draft is considered the draft of the quarterbacks. Also, all told, there were six future Hall of Famers drafted in the first round. The Eagles had the number 9 pick in that first round and did not take a quarterback. We're looking for two names. Who did they select with a number 9 pick, and who was the Eagles quarterback at the time that allowed them not to pick a quarterback? Our trivia question is brought to you by our friends at Carl's Cards, who will be donating a Bob Boomer Brown autographed 8x10 photograph from his signing, his appearance at the store in Havertown on October the 4th. Our call-in number is 929-477-2855. The lines are open for the answer to the trivia question, so please call and it's yours. All right. We'd also like to take time to thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Again, just a reminder, our www.shopforkisses.org phone lines are open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. Chet, let's talk some more about the 49ers. We've touched on it just a little bit. They're 1-2. They lost their last two to Chicago and Arizona. The word's starting to get out that Jim Harbaugh is wearing a little thin on his players, and they're responding in a negative way. You know, they're middle of the pack offensively. They're 17th in both rushing and passing. They are 7th against the run, 15th against the pass on defense. And what's your take on this game?
Wow. You know, the Niners started off with the easy win against Dallas in week one. So we thought they were going to be, you know, right back in contention again this season for another potential NFC Championship game or maybe even the Super Bowl. But things haven't gone quite so well since then. Kaepernick's been just kind of average, really, I think, this year. He got the big contract, of course, in the offseason. Right now, they're a desperate team. I mean, when you're 1-2 in one of the toughest divisions in football, every game is crucial in the 16-game season. So the Niners need to win this game. I mean, let's face it. They can't fall to 1-3 in that division, one and three on the season, especially against a team that, you know, they could end up playing somewhere down the road in the playoffs and home field would come into play. So I think the Niners really, really need this game. And, you know, there's that whole ebb and flow thing about the NFL and who's going to win. I just see this as a real, real tough game for the Eagles, and I hate to do it, but I got to pick the 49ers this week using my head instead of my heart. I'm going to say the Niners are going to win this one by about 10, 34 to 24.
Interesting.
Hope I'm wrong, of course.
Well, certainly. I kind of look at this thing a couple ways. One is the Eagles are on a roll. They're playing good offensively, obviously. I think they're going to score points. The offensive line being banged up is definitely a concern. But I kind of feel like the 49ers have their backs against the wall here. They can't afford to go 1-3. I said earlier I like the Eagles in this, and the more I think about it, the more I'm not so sure I do like the Eagles in this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as we've talked some more about all these injuries and – you know, Mark makes a great point. Colin Kaepernick and Casey Matthews is not a good matchup. So,
yeah.
You know, I think I'm going to I think I'm going to go with you on this. I think I'm going to go 49ers, but I think it's going to be close. Again, I think it's going to be high scoring. I just think in this one, the Eagles might not be able to outscore the 49ers because the 49ers will be able to exploit the Eagles' defense even more than the Redskins did.
Yep. Keep in mind, I picked the Colts in week two, and I'm glad I was wrong about that. But I have to pick the Niners this week. I got to go with logic here and just say they need this game. They're a pretty good team. They're at home. Niners are going to win this one, in my humble opinion.
I'm with you. And as much as I don't like to say it, I think I'm with you on this one.
All right.
Well, what about the rest of the NFC East? Let's talk about that for a second. Dallas has actually figured out how to get to 2-1. And then the Redskins and the Giants play each other. They're both 1-2. It'll be interesting to see how the Redskins bounce back from, you know, they were in a physical battle as well as the Eagles. So it'll be interesting to me to see how they bounce back. And the Giants just are terrible.
They did get a win on Sunday, but I'm picking the Redskins to beat the Giants. That's the Thursday night game this week. It's down in D.C., so the Redskins do have home field. But as you said, they are going to be banged up, feeling a little sore after that battle against the Eagles on Sunday. But they're a better team than I thought they were, I got to be honest. I know they're 1-2, but, they could have very easily won that game against the Eagles, as we discussed. So the Redskins are a better team than I thought they were. And, in fact, Dallas has played better than I thought. After losing the opener, they're 2-1. And, you can't write them off as quickly as we thought we would. The defense maybe isn't as bad as everybody thought that it was. They still have some weapons on offense, certainly. They can put up points. So, you know, maybe both Dallas and Washington can factor into things in the NFC East. I still don't think the Giants can. I thought if anybody could this year, it would be the Giants. They would have that bounce-back year, but I just don't think they have enough talent to do it. So Washington and Dallas, I think, do have a shot at winning a few more games than I thought they would at the beginning of the year.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, I think I told you to watch out for the Redskins. I thought they were going to be better, but I don't want to tell you.
You did. You did. You did.
All right. Well, listen, we got a caller. Let's see. Maybe we have a trivia answer.
All right.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. How you doing? Who we have?
I'm doing okay. My name's Dan Bevins.
Dan, welcome to the show. You have an answer for us tonight?
I'm gonna take a shot.
Go ahead.
I think the guy they drafted, I think it was either Michael Haddix or Kenny Jackson. I'm gonna say Michael Haddix.
Michael Haddix is correct.
Okay.
Michael Haddix is the right answer. His number 9 pick, running back out of Mississippi State.
Yeah, out of Mississippi. That's right. I remember him.
Yep.
And the quarterback's got to be, it's obvious, because it's got to be Jaws, because I don't think Randall came until, he might have, I think he came a year before Buddy took over the team in 85 or 86.
Yep. It is
Jaws.
Randall came just a couple years later.
Right, Randall came a couple years later. Okay.
I think we have a winner, Bill.
We do have a winner. Danny, do me a favor. Send me a message on Facebook and get me your address and everything, and we'll get it to Carl. And after that October 4 signing, we'll send you that Bob Brown autographed picture.
Wow, awesome. That's great. I will definitely do that. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right.
Thanks
for calling, my friend.
Hey, can I just say one thing?
Sure.
I just want to put kudos out there to Jason Peters. He became my favorite Eagle. And
absolutely.
NFL can say all they want about that not being a cheap shot, but I think it was. And the best thing about that whole thing was Jason Peters rushing to his rescue like that, sticking up for his quarterback. That's just the kind of guy this city, the city of Philadelphia, I think, loves. And I think that's going to carry that team further than even that win did, to be honest with you. That's the kind of thing that really, you got to start to get team continuity, and I think they already had it anyway, but that camaraderie, that all comes into play. And, they're really injured, they're banged up, but if they can get past the first half of the season and get healthy, I still think they got a shot.
Oh yeah, and I think to your point, I think as Chet mentioned earlier, the whole building respect for Nick Foles and the same for Jason Peters. Although Peters is a perennial Pro Bowler, you know, he's got a lot of respect. But it, you know, the way
right.
he defended Foles and the way you know the fans are on board, Chip Kelly's on board, the coaching staff's on board, the city's on board with those guys. You're exactly right. They became they became big names in Philadelphia last Sunday.
Absolutely. I think Jason Peters is legend.
All right, Dan. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks for giving us a call, and send me that information, and we will be sure to get that picture out to you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Jason
right,
Peters
Chet.
Got a lot of – Jason Peters got a lot of new fans there, Bill. What? Talk to me.
He did. I wanted to hit you up one thing real quick before we have to get over to the Phillies. Something we didn't talk enough about is what about that hit? What was
I
your
was
take
just
on
bring
that
up. Yeah, that's been the big topic this week. It was kind of weird because it was the interception that wasn't really an interception. The play continued, and Foles was, you know, kind of running in the direction of the play. So in that aspect, he's now a defender and could be blocked. But here's where the problem is. The NFL rules are not real clear on this because in two different areas, they say two different things. In one, they say the quarterback is always considered a defenseless player or whatever after a change of possession and shouldn't be hit. But then in another spot, they say, well, you can hit the quarterback. You just can't hit him with your helmet or on his helmet or whatever. So it's kind of weird. And Troy Vincent, you know, who's the arbiter of these sort of things, came out with the ruling saying, yes, it was a legal hit. Although a lot of people who watched it said, yeah, maybe it was legal, but it was still kind of a cheap shot and kind of dirty. At any rate, the guy's not getting fined. It was certainly a questionable hit, if nothing else. I don't know what the rule is now based on what we've heard this week. You know, after an interception, if a quarterback is pursuing the play, and, you know, Foles in this case was just kind of going in that direction. I don't think he was really looking to make a tackle. He was just kind of jogging in that direction. But if he is running in that direction, I think you've got to be able to block the guy. And the hit that Baker gave Foles occurred right as the guy who thought he had the interception was being tackled. So it was still kind of close where Foles was in the area. Bottom line, I think it was a legal hit, but still kind of dirty. How about you?
Well, I can tell you from back in the day, I go back to those dinosaur days all the time.
Yeah.
We were taught on a change of possession, find the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, find him. And that's exactly what Baker did. Now, with that said, you know, with all the new rules they're putting in place about defenseless players and things like that, Foles was somewhat of a defenseless player at the time. So
yep.
it is borderline. But I'm with you. I don't really think it's a dirty play. I do like, as we just talked about with Dan, is I do like that the way the Eagles reacted, though. Nick Foles will never
yep.
do that again. He'll never get caught
yep.
with his head down. And in turn, the Eagles, fortunately, Foles didn't get hurt. The Eagles benefit from it. They made something happen that's probably going to last them throughout the season. So I'm for it. I'm good with it. Fortunately, nobody got hurt. And I don't care if the other team gets suspended. Who cares if Baker gets suspended? I'm
and
just happy Foles didn't get hurt. The Eagles are better off for it.
Yeah, Foles did take quite a hit there and throughout that whole game. So it's good to see that he's still up and walking around this week.
Absolutely. Well, hey, let's talk about the Phillies for a few minutes. We have to do it. The season comes to an end on Sunday, thank goodness. Cole Hamels will get another chance for his 10th win of the season in the closing game on Sunday. They're going to make him go out there and probably get no run support just one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Kendrick's going for his 10th win. He's got a shot tonight. If he made it through the first inning, he might actually have a chance to win. But they will be the only opportunities to have 10-game winners on that team. And you know, we're sitting right now, the Phillies are sitting right now 71-86, and I picked them before the year to go 72-90. I believe you pick 73 and 89. Is that right?
I did.
If I remember.
Yep.
So we're pretty close on the money here. If they win one of their next five or two of their next five, one of us is going to be on it. And I don't think they're going to win three, four, or five in the next five. So I think we're pretty close.
Yeah.
And I guess my thing is I'm just a little surprised how it all happened. The older guys all played for the most part, played the entire season, which no one expected. They didn't get hurt, but they didn't produce. The bullpen early in the year looked horrible. They ended up being probably their strong point. Who would have thought Cliff Lee would have done nothing, that they would end up with no one with 10 wins and a guy that's made a pretty serious run for a batting title? Who would ever thought that and still come out with the same record?
Yeah, I got to be honest, Bill. I've actually lost interest in them somewhat lately. They play well for a few weeks at a time, then go right back into a funk when they just can't hit or can't score when they need to, frequently when Cole Hamels is on the mound, it seems. And there's a different lineup out there every night. And I don't know yet if we know enough about either Mikel Franco, as he's being called now, not Franco, but Franco, or Darren Ruff to know if they can contribute next year. I still don't think we know. As you said, who would have thought at the beginning of the year that the starting rotation, which looked to be so good, would end up in this big funk at the end of the year, whereas the bullpen, which was a big question mark at the beginning of the year, is now one of the strengths of this team. Even if Papelbon's not here next year, I think the bullpen is in pretty darn good shape. But the starting staff, that's a big mystery beyond Hamels next year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll talk about this on another show when we have a little more time, but I think if we look at this thing and we say, okay, take the pieces that you're going to get rid of and say, how are you replacing them? Okay, say you get rid of Howard, you know, they can do something with him. You're still taking 9,500 RBIs out of the lineup. You know, everybody wants to get rid of Rollins. Okay, you get rid of Rollins. Believe it or not, he still hit, 17, 18 home runs. Probably not a good thing, but he's still a solid shortstop. How do you replace him? And the same on the mound, you know. So that's a whole story for another day. But getting rid of guys isn't just quite as easy if you don't have anybody to plug in for.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, our friend Mark wanted to know, if we were the GM, would the Phillies or should the Phillies go all out for that Cuban slugger, Yasmani Tomas? That 23-year-old corner outfielder. What do you think? I mean, he does seem like the real deal. He's 23 years old. He's got power. Should the Phillies go get him?
Well, I don't know what all in means. You know, if all in means, you know, 5 years, $40 million, okay.
Yeah,
maybe.
We don't control the money, so I don't know. I don't know how much he's seeking. I don't know how
if
much the Phillies are willing to.
If 5 years means $120 million, then I'm not all in.
Yeah.
So it would depend on what it was going to cost. I mean, the guy, you know, so many of them guys come over here so highly touted, and they don't pan out when they get to the big league. So
right.
It'd have to be a good deal. I wouldn't just start throwing money at it.
Yeah. I mean, he did have a private workout with the Phillies.
Yeah, speaking of throwing money at it, you know, there's already been three firings of GMs as soon as their teams were eliminated, and one of them being Atlanta Braves' Frank Wren, who was with the club for almost like 15 years. And what looked like great signings of Dan Ugly and B.J. Upton, you know, doomed his fate. And, you know, they threw money at those two guys because they were going to throw them over the top, and gee whiz, Ugly didn't hit 180. In his whole time in Atlanta, and Upton is almost as bad. And, you know, we're sitting here looking sunny at the moment for Phil's GM, Ruben Amaro Jr.
Yeah, and the Braves really faded over the past month, too, man. They were right in the thick of things and then just couldn't get it done, whereas the Pirates, you know, go on a tear and clinch a playoff spot. But, yeah, Ruben Amaro still sitting pretty, and I'm not hearing anything that he might get fired. I'm hearing that he's probably coming back, so... you know, barring something unforeseen, Ruben Amaro Jr. will be our GM for the next year. How do you feel about that?
Well, I have not really been a huge Amaro basher, only because I think at some time players have to play, and you're paying these guys an awful lot of money to produce, and you see that every night that they aren't getting it done. And, you know, but with that said, I don't know who you could bring in with the state of the farm system and the state of the club right now that is going to do anything anytime soon. So if they keep him another year, I don't think it hurts him, because I don't know that they can correct anything that quickly anyway. So I'm kind of in between on it, I guess.
It's a crucial winter, though, for him and the team, just to see how he handles things, you know, who is re-signed, who gets traded, what the shape of this team is going into next season. A lot of question marks, and we'll probably discuss that over the next few weeks, but it's going to be interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, now I probably should quantify that, because if for some unknown reason they were to trade Cole Hamels, then now we got a problem. He's the franchise. Whatever happens in my mind needs to happen around Cole Hamels. Those kind of guys don't come around that often.
Yeah, I just don't see them doing that. I don't see them breaking it down totally and pulling a Sam Hinkie, like the Sixers, and just getting a bunch of prospects and starting over. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're just going to try to, make some minor moves here and there and hope that they can get another year still out of these aging veterans. I don't think they're going to make any wholesale changes, including a Hamels deal.
No, I agree. And part of it is because they probably can't get rid of any of those guys to begin with. Well, hey, we do need to hit on one more thing. And
this
you
is
know
the big
this
one.
Is like kind of on the top of my list. The Cole Hamels, Freddie Galvis batting race. It's come down to the wire, my friend. 5 games to go. Hamels is hitting 183. Galvis is hitting 173. The drama is going down to the last game because Cole will be pitching that last game. So if Galvis keeps it close and can get a hit, he's got a chance of passing Cole. But if Galvis tanks, Cole comes in, even if he goes 0-3, it could be Hamels winning the batting title. What do you think?
Now, do we know for sure that Hamels is pitching Sunday? I know it's his turn, but will they definitely pitch him on the final day of the season?
Well, all I can tell you is he's scheduled to go.
He is. Well, here's the thing. Freddie's got his work cut out for him, but since he still doesn't have that many at-bats this year, if he gets a couple of two-hit games between now and Sunday, I know that's a stretch, that would certainly put him over the top. And my money is on Freddie Galvis. I think he's going to beat Cole in that little batting race they're having.
Wow. Well, we'll see. He has been a little hot. He's played, he's done okay since he's been put in the lineup on a full-time basis. He has actually swung the bat a little bit better. But we'll see. He had a chance the other night. He got to hit his first time up, and Cole was pitching. And he went over the rest of the night, and Cole came up and got to hit himself.
Yeah, he did. Hamels raised his average from 172 up to 183 on the night. So
did,
it's going to be
did.
Interesting. And I do hope Hamels does get the opportunity to pitch one more time, because I would love to see him get that 10th victory, because you got to have one double-digit winner, We talked about this a month or two ago, that it's been since the mid-90s that the Phillies have gone an entire season without a 10-game winner. I don't want to see it happen again this year. I want to see Hamels get that 10th win, or Kendrick tonight, for God's sakes.
Yeah, well, I would too for Hamels because, his ERA is still under 2.5, and he's pitched so well. He should probably have 18 wins.
Yeah, did you see that stat? He's gone 22 straight starts, giving up 3 earned runs or less in a game. That's pretty amazing.
Yep. Well, and
he's got 9
if you look
wins.
At it that way, he should pretty much have 22 wins, because 3 earned runs should get you a win.
It should, but not with that offense.
Absolutely. All right, well, we wanted to give another reminder of some of the signings coming up in the Delaware Valley in the near future. As we mentioned, Carl's Cards will have NFL Hall of Famer, the Eagles' Bob Boomer Brown, on Saturday, October 4th. They will also have the Flyers' R.J. Umberger on October the 23rd, a private signing with the Big E, Eric Lindros, in November, and John LeClair in the store in December. Carl does a great job getting guests in. We hope you can support his efforts. Carl has a Facebook page, or you can check out his website at www.carlscards.com. Chet, any parting words for the birds as they head to San Francisco and the Phils heading for the golf course?
Well, like I said, I'm predicting a 49ers win on Sunday, but I really, really hope that I'm wrong and that 4 days from now we'll all be cheering about a 4-0 Eagles team. So I hope I'm wrong with this prediction. Go Birds!
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm gonna root for the Eagles too, as I always do. But I'm good if they win. I just have to say, my parting shot of the week is the Eagles fans are excited, and I understand that, but they've won three ball games. We're not Super Bowl champions. There's a long season ahead. The injuries will play a part in how this thing all plays out and how they can adjust to that. Just keep rooting, you know, keep being fans that we are and all that, but just play out the season and let's take it one at a time and not, you know, we're not in the playoffs. It's not January.
That's right. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. And can you believe the NHL season for the Flyers starts 2 weeks from tonight? Hard to believe.
It does. 2 weeks from tonight against Boston. And, you know, I was going to mention to you that you surprised me last week when you told us that you were a winter hockey fan and not a full season hockey fan. You caught me a little off guard with that.
Yeah, I just can't get into it yet when it's still, you know, 70 degrees outside or whatever. It's got to be colder out there for me to really tune into the hockey. So I'll really start watching the Flyers in earnest once we get to, say, January. For now, we're focusing on, well, it would be the Phillies under most normal circumstances, but the Eagles for sure at this time of the year, and the Phillies and the baseball playoffs otherwise. But yeah, I'll be into the orange and black for sure come January.
Well, see, it's funny because if you are me, you're watching all the games in your shorts.
So yeah,
the season
the advantage
has nothing
of living
to do with it down here.
Yep, I hear you.
Yeah, so well, the thing about January is by the time January comes around, you got about 30 games already in the books, and you know you're finding your spot already by the time January 1 comes along.
That's true.
So, but again, it definitely does step up there at the end of the year or the last half of the season, and surely in the playoffs if you're lucky enough to be there. So I'm looking forward to them as well. You know, TV stinks, so let's watch Flyers hockey during the week and the Eagles on the weekends, a little college football on Saturday.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank Carl's Cards for their participation in the show, as well as Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show. We'll join Philly Press Box next Wednesday night, October 1 at 7 p.m. And, Chet, I will be flying solo with a guest next week, guest partner. Since you have a previous commitment, how am I going to find somebody that can fill the big shoes, my friend?
The shoes aren't that big, Bill. I'm sure you'll do fine. It's back to school night for my kids next week, so if I don't go to that, I'm in big trouble with the missus. So you'll find someone, and it'll be just fine.
Well, they are big shoes to fill. Maybe we'll have to find a couple people to fill this co-pilot seat next week. But we'll be here, and we'll be talking all things Philly sports. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio.
Simply, we're from Philadelphia and we fight. That's it. If there's a game on, we're playing. End of story.
High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.